Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. A cheeseburger is awesome, but it's even better with bacon. This is the Jeff Blair Show, topped with a sizzling slice of Stephen Brunt. Fill your face on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. John Palmarosi will join us in the next hour. We might even be able to drop in a surprise guest along the way. Oh, good, more coffee.
Yes.
Eric Prime with the coffee delivery.
Thank you, Mr. Prime.
It's my third of the day.
Yeah, I'm short one, so this is this will come in handy.
I may have to take a break in about 5 minutes for my third cup of coffee. Jay McKenna is the spokesman for Spirit of Shankly. They're the Liverpool Football Club Supporters Union. He's going to join us at 10:40. I think one of the most interesting stories I've come across in some time. Liverpool Football Club, which is owned by Fenway Sports Group, which owns the Boston Red Sox. They decided that they were going to increase some ticket prices this year. Sports team raises ticket prices. Where have we heard that before? The difference is that, there's a couple of differences. First of all, generally speaking, fans in Europe, particularly soccer fans in England, tend to have more of what they consider a proprietary interest in their team.
Yep. You own the team, but you don't own
the team. You own the team, but you don't own the team. And as someone else pointed out, the other thing is that fans still have this romantic notion of soccer as being the working man's sport. It's not as much the case as it used to be. Bottom line is, Liverpool decides they're going to raise some ticket prices, which, no one likes ticket prices being raised, but, that seems to be the way of the world. And what got the fans up in arms is that Liverpool's raising ticket prices at a time where the TV contract for the Barclays Premiership, or I guess it's now just called the Premiership, it's about to explode. Anywhere from £97 million, which, do the math quickly, what does that work out to in Canadian dollars? More than Bob McCowan makes in a year. £97 million to £146 million. Depending on where you finish, this is the added income teams are going to receive next year from this huge international TV contract that kicks in. So basically the fans' approach, Stephen, was, you're getting, if you're Liverpool, you're probably going to get something in the neighborhood of $132 million. It's kind of weighted depending on where you finish in the standings and that. But you could be getting £100 to £132 million extra, and you're raising ticket prices at the same time. So Liverpool supporters group staged a walkout the last game. And they, I believe the number, they figure something close to 15,000 people walked out on TV. It was remarkable to see.
In the 77th minute.
In the 77th minute, right. Right at the price, the ticket increase that most annoyed fans. But they walked out. Yesterday, Fenway Sports Group not only announced that they had reviewed their policy and that they were holding ticket prices where they were, they also issued an apology. And, I don't think we'll talk to Jay McKenna about this, but Steve, and just before Ren Lavoie joins us to talk about the latest Jonathan Drouin to the Senators rumor, I don't think you'd see this in North America. I don't know if it'd work in North America, but it's pretty remarkable to think in this day and age that fans were able to mobilize and do this.
Yeah, it is. I think the truth is that if the owners had wanted to just ride this out, people would have paid the price because there's not that much. There are only so many seats in Anfield, yeah. And if you want to go and watch a game there, and there's incredible demand, and it's that's an international club too, right? If you actually go to a match there, it's like going to Old Trafford. You'll see people there from all over the world.
If the locals aren't buying tickets, the tourists will pay twice the price.
Someone
to go
from
and
Japan
see
will buy the tickets,
exactly.
Right? And it's like that. So those tickets are going to get sold. The price would be paid, and that's the market determines the price always, and the market would bear that. But this is about something else. It's about It's kind of a nod to the community, which is Liverpool's a small city, small town. Two big clubs there, Everton and LFC, and you can see the stadiums from one stadium from the other place. That's how small it is.
Mm-hmm.
That club is both of those clubs, the red and the blue, are so attached to the community in a way that there's not really comparables for sports here anymore.
No,
it's different here.
Green Bay, Saskatchewan.
Maybe. Yeah, I guess that would be the closest.
But
those are literally publicly owned teams.
Exactly.
But yeah, that would be the closest thing. But it's just that sense of, the kind of shared history, the shared mm-hmm. history part of it, which in Liverpool's case includes some great glorious moments and some horrible tragic moments, and both of which are acknowledged. It's very much a living, breathing thing, the history of that club. And I think the guys who've, the last two sets of owners have been foreigners. Had the Gillette Tom Hicks ownership, and now you have the John Henry ownership, Americans owning that team. And I think both of them, have had a bit of a rough patch trying to understand the difference between, say, owning the Boston Red Sox or, mm-hmm. Any of the things that George Gillette owned over the years, and owning, in quotation marks, Liverpool Football Club. Because, as I said, you own it, and you make the money, and, it's run like an NFL team in a lot of ways in terms of the business. But you have to at some point bow to the community and bow to the supporters. They are the blood going through the veins of that club. And that sounds like a big honking cliche, but it's true, And I think I'm glad that they could fight back, and I'm glad that somebody would listen. I'm kind of surprised. This felt more like, one of those last kind of futile pushbacks from fans that, unwilling to understand that the world has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, they bow to the folks, and that's a great thing.
Well, and the other thing that's interesting, too, is now other teams that are considering ticket price increases, there could be a trickle-down effect.
There could be. It's Liverpool's different, though. You go to a game at Stamford Bridge. Like, go to a match at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea. Chelsea's right in the middle of London, obviously.
Right.
Tiny little stadium, considering that that's an international club. And it still has its core fan base, but, you're not shocked to pay an outrageous amount of money to go to a Chelsea match.
No.
Or an Arsenal match. You're just not. But Liverpool, again, it's kind of it still has that, at least the veneer of the gritty, industrial,
working man's.
It's a port town, right? It's kind of cleaned up these days, but it's not a pretty place.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a grotty, real place. And I guess that's part of it too, right? That it's, mm-hmm. This is Liverpool. It's a different thing.
And I guess in some ways you credit John Henry and the Fenway Sports Group for listening to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right. They didn't have to. They could have said, gee, this is too bad, but here's the reality. Just in 2013, these are the latest prices I could find, and this kind of factors into this as well. If you look at the European leagues, and one of the issues that the Premier League has is that the Bundesliga is so ridiculously priced lower.
Yep.
But the teams in the Bundesliga are, I believe, you have to have 40% public ownership or something like that.
Is that the deal? Yeah.
It's a different ownership setup there. But in 2013, the average price for the cheapest ticket in the Bundesliga was 10 euros. So you're looking at 15 bucks. The average cost of the lowest price adult season ticket was 200 euros. So you're looking at $400 for a season's ticket. Compared to £30 for the cheapest ticket in the Premiership, and £467 for the season ticket in the Premiership. This is the lowest priced average. So double.
But, people sitting in this city, thinking about what it costs to go to a Toronto Maple Leaf game, are saying it sounds pretty reasonable.
It sounds reasonable, but you have to remember, typically incomes in England are lower than incomes here.
But, tiny amount of inventory, right? Because they
yes.
Even with cups, games, and if there's internationals, they're going to play, 25 home matches a year?
25 home matches, yeah.
Maybe, something like that.
Yeah.
So there's not much inventory, huge demand.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like baseball where you have 81 home games, and that's why you do end up with cheap tickets at one end of the spectrum. But, those aren't – £77 is not an outrageous amount of money to pay for the most elite level of the sport,
mm-hmm.
And one of the most storied clubs in football. that's, you know, it, objectively, that's not a ton of dough.
No.
But it's what it, you know, it's kind of the button it pushes in a place like Liverpool.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, that's not, oh my God, I can't believe anybody pays $200 to go to a Liverpool. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go on the secondary market and try and buy that same ticket, I guarantee it'll cost a lot more than $200.
Arsenal and Tottenham. This is in, when were we in England? Oh, I should know because it was my, oh, I'm going to get in trouble for this. It was my anniversary. But anyhow, I want to say 10 years ago, wanted to go and see Tottenham play Arsenal. And the secondary ticket market was $275 US.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For one ticket.
Yeah. And that's again, it's not outrageous here. You just
it's
what it costs, right? Like if anybody buy postseason tickets for the Blue Jays last year, you know, that's kind of what stuff costs.
Yeah. But it's you're right. It's the buttons it pushes over there. But it also is that the income over there is there are fewer people willing. There are fewer people willing to pay that type of money to go watch.
I would say, but the counter to that is that there are enough people to pay who would pay that much who would fill that stadium every week.
Although but they probably wouldn't be the hardcore fan.
Yeah, right? That's it. You know, but again, this is more of a nod. It's a nod to history.
Right.
It's a nod to tradition, and to a degree, it's a nod to the working class. You know, the shrinking working class in a lot of ways. You know, the people who made that football club what it is. So, as a business, I don't think they had to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they could have ridden it out. And, yeah, there would have been some protests, but all those seats would have been filled every Saturday or Sunday or Monday, whenever they were playing. All of those seats would have been filled, and they still would have come and sung You'll Never Walk Alone, and still would have felt like Anfield.
Yeah.
But the owners, you know, again, showed a little bit of sensitivity and said, you know, it's not – I guess what they decided, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
For the money we would get, it's not worth what we are going to do to the heritage. You know, again, it's all kind of intangible stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of about heritage. It's not about the bottom line. It's not about the marketplace and what the market will bear. It's a nod to history and a nod to culture, which is kind of cool.
Oh, I think it's really cool. And as I said, I don't know if it has any legs necessarily, but there will be other. I would be willing to bet that other owners in the Premiership have at least noted this. I don't pretend that the Glazers are suddenly going to decide, well, that's it, we're not going to raise ticket prices at Man U. But, you know, I think maybe, you know, teams, kind of the second level teams, a Southampton, a Crystal Palace or something, they may have cause to think now.
Well, and they're all, you know, every one of them's different, right? You've got big teams with tiny little parks and, you know, teams like West Ham that plays in Upton Park, which is a huge, horrible dump of a place.
And they're moving into the Olympic Stadium.
Which is going to be a huger place.
Huger place.
But, it's, you know, it's club to club. But, you know, the kind of super clubs, you know, Manchester United, the Old Trafford now is a massive stadium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Emirates is a massive stadium. But, you know, again, Chelsea's, I think Stamford Bridge is still under 40,000 seats. And, you know, that's, you again, think about that international club, you know, having a crap year this year, but this, you know, in the heart of London and there's only 40,000 seats. That's
what you call demand.
That is what you call demand.
We will, as I said, we'll be joined by Jay McKenna, spokesman for the Spirit of Shankly, later on in the show. And we'll get his take on what happened and what he thinks the implications are for the rest of the Premiership. As far as ticket prices go. But before Jay joins us, Ren Lavoie is our regular NHL insider from TVS Sports. Perfect timing. The Ottawa Senators adding Dion Phaneuf a couple of days ago, losing last night to the Detroit Red Wings. And Ren, TVS Sports, you're now reporting that the Senators may be in on Jonathan Drouin, which makes a lot of sense, frankly.
It's more my colleague Louis Jean reported that last night. During the pregame of the Ottawa Senators game versus the Red Wings. That being said, that's something that I've heard too, being in Ottawa last weekend for the Maple Leafs game. And at that time, I've heard quite of the same thing. It's obvious that the Ottawa Senators are trying to be a better team. They already acknowledge that they really and badly need a defenseman to play with Cody Ceci. So that's a thing that's resolved right now with Dion Phaneuf being involved in that trade. And now I'm pretty sure that they're looking at their offense, and they need more depth. you know, you look at their fourth line. I'm not saying Jonathan Drouin is a fourth liner, but you look at their fourth line, they need to be better. And it's something that they're I'm pretty sure when they're looking at their lineup right now, they feel like they have some bodies that are playing and they're not supposed technically to be there all season long. And if the playoffs are starting tomorrow, that means that a guy like Neil is still in the lineup. And I'm not saying he's not a good forward, but you wonder if the playoffs starts, if he's still going to play. So that's what the Ottawa Senators are all about right now. It's a tough loss for them after playing well since Saturday versus the Leafs. And, I was shocked by that trade. I'm pretty sure a lot of people in Toronto were shocked by that trade. And I saw Lou Lamoriello on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. In New Jersey for the Martin Brodeur ceremony. And I asked him, I said, I never expect a Toronto Maple Leafs trade with the Ottawa Senators. And he looked at me and said, yeah, everybody's saying that to me. And I don't understand why. Well, it's just because there's a big battle between those two teams in Ontario. And that's the reason why. And one small anecdote for you. Saturday, I was at the morning skate in Ottawa. And I saw Lou, and I said, I just, you know, say hi to Lou when the Maple Leafs were on the ice. And he looked at me and said, I have to leave you quickly because I forgot my phone in Brian's Murray office. So I need to go and pick it up. And I was like, it's impossible that something's going to happen between those two. It never crossed my mind. I just said, Brian and him are friends. He just went to say hello, and he forgot about his phone, and that's it. And 3 days later, you're like, wow, that was not just a courtesy meeting. It was really the base of that trade. And it's really Saturday morning that it started, and they were able to resolve that that trade after.
What do you think Drouin would cost the Ottawa Senators?
That's a great question, to be honest with you. And from my understanding, it's costly. It's from team to team, it's different. The Lightning are asking for something different all the time. Sometimes they want to ride in the defenseman, a young one. And with other teams, there was multiple assets maybe being involved in a possible trade. So it depends. And now I'm sure the Ottawa Senators, you look at the history of Brian Murray, he's always looking as a GM to go and find those players that, quote unquote, are not, nobody wants anymore because they are not like they're not working or thinking like everybody else in the NHL. And you look at Kyle Turris is a good example. Now I'm pretty sure that they look at Jonathan Drouin and they say, we need him in this organization. But what's going to be the cost? If they're asking for a young D like CeCe, mm-hmm. I'm not sure they're going to say yes to that.
Well, it would kind of defeat the purpose of the deal from Ottawa's point of view, wouldn't it? If you had to give up a guy like CeCe, like it's just, I think that would be a tough one to swallow for a team that, you know, an NHL ready young player, a guy who's playing in the NHL, a young player would be is the highest cost you can pay in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And that's what it is. So, I'm pretty sure at one point Steve Yzerman will find somebody that will be ready to pay the price. And there's no way he's going to trade Jonathan Drouin just for a player, or make maybe the mistake that the Coyotes made a few years ago with Ottawa with that trade for Kyle Turris. Mm-hmm. So I mean that was a bad trade for the Coyotes. And Steve Yzerman is not going to allow that to himself and to his organization. So, it's going to take some time. I do expect something's going to happen before the trading deadline because there's no way it's not going to be good, I think, for Jonathan Drouin and for the asset because this is an asset at the end of the day. They need to protect it and they need to make sure that the value will be really good. And he's still a Tampa Bay Lightning right now. Obviously, he's not playing anywhere, but that you need to make sure that his value is going to stay up because if it's going down, well, you're going to turn out like the Coyotes a few years ago with Caltaris.
Ren, how is all this being viewed in Montreal? I mean, it's pretty clear that the Ottawa Senators are going for it. And I can guarantee you that, I mean, there'd be a lot of people cheering for Ottawa to be a Canadian team actually
right
make
here,
the playoffs.
You mean cheering? Yeah, I can hear it.
In
this I can
particular
hear that
building, yeah. There'll be a lot of people, and maybe in your building as well, they'd be a lot of people cheering for the Senators to get in. But how is this being viewed in Montreal? I mean, Ottawa's doing all this while Montreal's kind of, you know, apparently waiting for a miracle recovery for Carey Price.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I mean, right now, if we had that conversation, I'll say last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, I would have said that, you know, the Montreal Canadiens are going to be a team that's going to tank in a way. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen right now because they're 3 points away. Mm-hmm. They're playing the Buffalo Sabres on Friday. They're going to play the Coyotes after. I mean, those teams are beatable. And Ben Scriven is changing everything. He's really playing well right now for the first time since he's with the Montreal Canadiens. Big difference for him is instead of concentrating on only his style or, you know, the way he should play and all his movement, he's concentrating on the puck and making saves. Even if it doesn't look good, he's making those saves compared to 2-3 weeks ago. So now suddenly they're playing. Scriven suddenly is a good goaltender. And it changed everything because if a week ago I would have said to you there'll be some big changes in Montreal, Tom Gilbert will be out, maybe Thomas Fleischman will be out, Dale Weiss will be out, and maybe more change during the summer. Now you're looking at the situation, you're seeing P.K. Subban playing well, you're seeing Thomas Plekanec playing well, the veterans are playing really well right now. So, whoops, we're seeing the Montreal Canadiens that were supposed to be a good team during this season and easily makes the playoffs. As of right now, I don't think Marc Bergevin is ready to say that he's a buyer, and he's not ready to say that he's a seller. So he wants to see what's going to happen this week and next week, and after that, he'll make his move. There's players around that are available right now. And you know, they're rental players, and I expect Mark to make a move in that direction. They badly need another forward. Everybody's talking about it, and it's going to happen if they're making the playoffs. But until then, I mean, it's kind of everything is up in the air, to be honest with you, because a week ago at this time, everybody was down. And suddenly those two games during the weekend and that big victory versus the Lightning suddenly changed everything. And you look at the NHL, it's scary. I mean, it's crazy, the ups and the downs week after week. It's you know, it's amazing to see how it's going on right now. Same thing with the Ottawa Senators. I mean, I was there Saturday morning and everybody was down. Mm-hmm. And now suddenly, wow, everything went up, and they had a loss last night in Detroit, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to make the playoffs or make a good push. I expect them to make a really good push.
I think we're going to, you know, who knows how this Habs season is. It's been a very unpredictable year, to say the least. But
exactly.
But we may look back, Ren, on those two matinees on the weekend, and they beat two crappy teams, and they were life and death against Carolina. You know, Scrivens saved them in that game in a lot of ways. Yeah. But, you know, it did kind of seem like they got their mojo back mm-hmm. after those two games. And, you know, Subban, you know, was playing with a lot of confidence. I think having a goaltender you can count on a little bit changes things. And I'm not saying they're going to march triumphantly and win 10 in a row or something like that, the way they did at the beginning of the year. But there is this, you know, they got a bit of a feeling when they went into Tampa and won that, or beat Tampa in that game, that, you know, maybe they've got a little bit of that swagger back that they had at the beginning of the year.
And it starts with Ben Scrivens. I'm sorry, but you have to just to look the way he played versus the Edmonton Oilers to start the first 5 minutes. The Montreal Canadiens weren't there at all. It was Carey, to be honest with you. But he made the difference. And after that, they scored 5-6 goals. And people are like, oh, well, you know, they're playing well right now. And suddenly the forwards are scoring goals. Hey, it's no secret. if your goalie is allowing the first and the second goal all the time, you're not going to play with confidence. Mm. And that's what it is. I think Ben Scriven, just the fact that he gave that team Saturday afternoon, a chance to win after 5 minutes, it changed everything on the bench. And suddenly, instead of being down, they were like, wow, our goalie's playing well tonight. We have a chance for the first time since a long time. That's the reality. And don't tell me that's not how it works. It works exactly like that. Well, if your goaltender is playing well, everybody's going to play well.
Correct. And you know, Ren, knowing Ben Scrivens a little bit from his time here, yeah. I mean, you can argue about his qualities as a goaltender. I don't think anybody would argue that he doesn't have a supersized personality. I mean, he does. Yeah. His personality was in the NHL 15 years ago.
Yeah. And you know what? I realized quickly that he's not, a guy who's always down on himself. He's quite upbeat. Even if he was not playing well to start, his season with the Montreal Canadiens when he was traded, I mean, he was always upbeat. He's a guy who's trying to learn French all the time.
Mm-hmm.
His first interview that he made on Standard Ice, I think, was Sunday after that win versus Carolina. All his first words were in French, and he's trying hard. I mean, he's embracing what his time in Montreal right now, and good for him. His start was really, really bad. He was not playing well, and there was a lot of question mark about Marc Bergevin's decision to go and, trade for him. And now it's paying off. And if he's playing like that versus the Sabres on Friday, well, who knows?
Suddenly,
not only is going to be able to say that, hey, I have the Montreal Canadiens to make the playoffs, he'll have a contract for next season somewhere.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're going to get a third chance someplace in the NHL, Montreal is a pretty damn good place to get your third chance.
Exactly.
it really is.
Well, and what I like is now he's fighting the puck. Instead of wanting the puck to hit him, he's making sure that he's going to find a way to save that puck. And that's a big, big difference between before and today. So now it's more, everything's based on the reflex and not exactly on position, but who cares? At the end of the day, you need to win the game. So let's go play, have fun, and find solution. And he's, for me, he's the Montreal Canadiens' first star since Saturday in those three games. And I'm repeating myself, nothing against Mike Condon, but it was too much pressure on one guy and on a guy that, wasn't supposed to have that pressure this year. And Ben played a lot in the NHL, knows all the players that are, all the buildings, played everywhere, and now it's paying off. So good for Marc Bergevin, the Montreal Canadiens.
Ren, we're going to let you scoot. Thank you so much for doing this. Have a great weekend. We'll chat next week, my friend. You be well.
Take care. Have a nice weekend to you guys.
Take care. It's Ren Lvov, TVA Sports, one of our regular NHL insiders. So there you go, Louis Jean.
Who's he? Never heard of that guy.
Louis Jean? Everybody knows who Louis Jean is.
One of my faves.
Louis Jean's reporting that Jonathan Drouin is the apple of the Ottawa Senators' eye. Cody Ceci might be the guy involved in any deal. That would be hard. I mean, I could see, I know Bruce Garriock of The Sun had a story that Thomas Chabot, I think that's, is it Chabot or Chabot, a former first-round pick of the Senators, is a guy that the Lightning were interested in as well. But you've really got to be careful when you start dealing players of that particular age. We're going to be joined, by the way, in a few minutes by Jay McKenna, spokesman for the Spirit of Shankly, Liverpool Football Club Supporters Union. We'll talk about, Stephen and I were talking about at the top of the hour, the successful attempt to get Liverpool Football Club to hold the line in ticket prices. But I've just had this handed to me. If you want to go to the Blue Jays home opener, time to check the secondary ticket market. Tickets for the Honda home opener on April 8th, 2016 have sold out. The Blue Jays launched the sale of single game tickets today at 10 a.m., so it took about, 20 minutes for the home opener to sell out. A minimal number of tickets are reserved to honor commitments to Major League Baseball players and league officials. To the extent that these tickets are returned to the club, they will be made available for public sale. So who knows, maybe Rob Manfred decides to take two pals instead of four, in which case those tickets will be available. And you can visit www.bluejays.com regularly to check for availability. So again, some of those tickets that aren't used will be put up for sale publicly. And again, Honda opening week starts with the Boston Red Sox on April 9th and 10th and the New York Yankees on April 12th to 14th.
50, the big clock downstairs, 57 days to the home opener, I believe.
57 days to the home opener. What are we at now for pitchers and catchers? I never know. You know what the problem is?
22nd, I think, isn't
22nd,
it?
22nd. You know what the problem is? So many of them are there now that the pitchers and catchers are reporting, Dave. It's not the same. But anyhow, there you go. The Honda home opener sold out. No surprise, and that's a pretty good opening weekend. Red Sox, April 9th to 10th, Yankees, April 12th to 14th. John Farrell, David Price.
I believe April 9th is David Price v. Marcus Stroman, if everything plays out the way I think it's going to.
The love will be breaking out all over.
So there you go.
It'll be great. Jay McKenna, spokesman for the Spirit of Shankly, joins Stephen Brunt and myself when the Jeff Blair Show continues on the home of the Blue Jays. We're going to have to start saying that with more regularly now. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
When you walk through a storm.
This is modern Liverpool. This is like football, man. This is crazy. £77. To watch that? Are you mad? James Milner? What the are you mad? Jordan Henderson as your captain? Off. Honestly, would you pay £77 to see Jordan Henderson kick a ball against a wall? No, honestly, pal. Swear to God, it actually does me brain in. Sorry.
Golden sky.
That was from Redman TV.
Yes.
A Liverpool fan media outlet.
Now, that guy's Irish. He's not Scouse.
That guy's
right?
Irish. He's not a Scouse accent. He's from Dublin, as he says.
But there's lots of them floating around Liverpool, too.
Yeah. That's gotten a lot of play on YouTube. It was a big hit around the office yesterday. Stephen Brunt and Jeff Blair, we talked about this at the top of the hour about how... You know, we've talked a lot about fans and ticket prices, and I think in North America we just kind of shrug our shoulders and, you know, we kind of bite the bullet, as it were, and pay the prices. But things are a little different in Europe. Things are certainly different in Liverpool. Liverpool supporters, and I think Stephen Brunt gave you the entire social context to what Liverpool Football Club means to its fans and means to that city and, quite frankly, means to the whole Premiership. They decided they weren't going to stand for a ticket price increase, and they walked out of a match, last Saturday's match, in the 77th minute. It was Saturday or Sunday, in the 77th minute. Lo and behold, yesterday, Fenway Sports Group, John Henry, the people who own Liverpool, he also owns the Boston Red Sox, they announced that not only were they holding prices on tickets, well, they apologized. And there's just in so many ways, this notion is so foreign to what we have seen in North America. Quite frankly, for someone who's covered sports for a long time, it's kind of mind blowing. Because I'd kind of given up on the idea that fans could do much about anything.
Yes.
And I know there's some unique things here, but, you know, God love them. The supporters got together. And they force change. Now, I don't know what where this is all going to go. I don't know what it will mean for other clubs. But one of the fan groups is the Spirit of Shankly. They are the Liverpool Football Club Supporters Union. Jay McKenna is a spokesman for the Spirit of Shankly. You can follow him on Twitter at Jay McKenna. And at Jay McKenna 87. Jay McKenna joins Stephen Brunt and myself in the Jeff Blair Show. Jay, thanks so much for doing this. First of all, congratulations. And you know what? If you could tell our listeners, because you know it's in Toronto and Canada, the Premiership's big here, and there are a lot of Liverpool fans. I'm unfortunately for you a bit of a Manchester United fan, but that's okay. I think we could probably live with that. But tell our listeners here in just a couple of minutes the significance of this, of what you folks have done.
This is quite incredible, really. Saturday's walkout was unprecedented. It's not taken place at Anfield ever before, even when we were owned by two other American owners, Tomix and George Gillette, who nearly took us into bankruptcy. We didn't protest on this scale, but in excess of 10,000 supporters walked out of Anfield in the 77th minute in protest at ticket prices. Very loud chants about greed and enough is enough aimed towards the owners. And for us, you know, we were expecting a long battle to try and encourage the club to change their mind. But yesterday we received the news that not only were they going to completely change their mind and go back to much of what ticket prices are like now, they committed to not making any more revenue from supporters than what they currently make. They've planned to freeze these prices now for two seasons so that supporters can be assured they won't go back up. And they said sorry, as you mentioned, which was something unexpected. I was asked often by people, what did Liverpool need to do? And I said they needed to reconsider and they needed to come out and admit they'd made a mistake. I didn't think I could expect them to apologise. And yet, lo and behold, three billionaire owners of Liverpool Football Club came out yesterday, acknowledged they were wrong and apologised to supporters, which is quite remarkable.
Yeah, it's astounding, you know, and kind of heartening, Jay. If they hadn't done that, if the owners had decided to ride this out and take the criticism and push the price increase forward, realistically, what would have happened? You know, it's not those supporters would have been back, wouldn't they? Still next season?
No, I think Liverpool and the owners misjudged the mood on this. I think they thought they could do this and expect maybe some anger, you know, on social media or on forums and, you know, maybe some protest and some flags. I think they thought that would have been the extent of the expression of any anger. And I think Saturday really concerned them. For us, and we were talking to supporters that this would have carried on for us, and we were planning, you know, further protests. We were talking to supporters about that, and we'd also started contacting club sponsors and official partners. And one of those we started contacting last week was Subway, and bombarding them with emails and tweets on Twitter to tell them that, you know, they needed to intervene and speak to the owners and tell them it wasn't acceptable. And you know, clearly the pressures begin to tell on them. I think the impact, if they had have completely ignored it, is that they probably would have angered a lot of supporters and they probably would have priced supporters out of going to Anfield. And I think they quickly realised that's not something they want to do.
You know, one of the other things I noticed, Jay, because I listen to a lot of British radio. I listen to Talk Sport. I listen to the BBC a lot. You guys got a ton of support from people like Stan Collymore, Colin Murray. I mean, it was, you know, The Guardian, David Kahn, people like that. You got a lot of media support, didn't you?
Yeah, there's a lot of people like David Kahn and Stan Collymore and others who've talked about ticket prices for a long time and have been on, you know, have been very supportive of supporters calling for changes. What had always been the bit missing, though, was supporters had never taken action, not on this scale. And I think everyone was thinking, well, if you don't do that eventually, you know, we're just going to keep talking about it and nothing's going to change. And it was remarkable for us to see so many people, you know, I had supporters from other clubs congratulating us on such a big demonstration. And that evening, you know, Alan Shearer on Match of the Day on the BBC, you know, making the arguments that I'm used to having to make to other people, saying that ticket prices should be lower. I think what we have achieved through this is it's pretty clear now. I think that supporters have won the argument in the UK that ticket prices shouldn't cost any more. And in fact, clubs should be looking to reduce ticket prices given the very, very large TV deal that they've got.
I wonder, Jay, you know, I was over there during the Hicks Gillette ownership, and, you know, the anger among the supporter base was pretty palpable if you were in the city. Now, the club was better then, though, so that mitigated it a little bit, at least through some of their term. But I wonder, you know, I wonder if the John Henry Group has learned something that the Hicks Gillette folks never really, I think, understood, which is, you know, you can own the team, and you get the revenue and you control the business, but you know, you're really only a custodian of the club. That the club exists and will continue on after you're gone, and it's about the city and about the supporters. Do you think that point has been made to John Henry?
Yeah, I think it has. I think that the word custodian was used by Tomics and George Gillette, and they got it badly wrong. But obviously, in John Henry came in, and he actually said to us, you know, that they realised, you know, what Tomics and George Gillette were like, and they wanted to be custodians. And in fact, you know, John Henry, Tom Werner, and Mike Gordon in their letter yesterday, you know, they used the word custodians again. I think they'll have been told by people inside the club, you know, these supporters see it as belonging to them ultimately, because, you know, because one day they will sell the club and someone else will take charge, but, you know, we'll still be here supporting them and going to matches. So, you know, they might get to make business decisions, but I think what we reminded them of on Saturday was, you know, the importance and the strength that supporters do actually have, particularly at Liverpool.
Jade, do you think this will have legs with other teams, with other fan groups? Will we see more and more organized attempts to as you say, not just hold ticket prices, but drive them down? Like, I mean, and I'm thinking particularly of some of the smaller clubs. You know, maybe not the bigger clubs as much as the smaller clubs.
Well, it's a strange debate, ticket prices in the UK, because there are some clubs in the Premier League anyway who do it really well. So Leicester City, who are top of the league and look like they may well surprise everyone and win it, they have some of the cheapest ticket prices in the Premier League. So there's no correlation between success and ticket prices, which is one of the points we've made, because of the TV revenues and commercial deals and sponsorships, it's an increasingly small amount of how much clubs actually generate. But I think, you know, it has started a conversation and captured the imagination of supporters to say, well, you know, we should and will take action. And we speak to supporter groups of other clubs all the time. And we've had action and demonstrations about away ticket prices. And we'll continue them. And I'm sure, you know, clubs will probably see their supporters begin to raise this issue with them, both inside the ground and in meetings as well.
Jay, listen, we appreciate you joining us. Again, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a great story, and just well done.
Thanks a lot.
It couldn't have been easy. You know, it was funny because I listened to some of the reports, and people were really conflicted about walking out, because you don't walk out if you're a Liverpool fan, do you?
No, it was a really difficult decision. It was a very strange feeling for me personally, because obviously we've been involved in arranging the demonstration, and you know, so we wanted that to be a success, but it was strange looking at the clock, waiting for it to turn to the 77th minute so I could get up and leave. But it was a very difficult decision for supporters, because these are people who, you know, there were a lot of people we spoke to who've never walked out, never left a Liverpool match early in 10, 20, 30 years of supporting Liverpool. They've never done that, even for, you know, probably family emergencies, but I think a lot of them seen the bigger picture on this, and you know, I think that was the kind of, I think that maybe made people realize just how strongly supporters felt.
Jay, thanks so much. Take care. Best of luck the rest of the season.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Jay McKenna is a spokesman for the Spirit of Shankly, Liverpool FC Supporters Union. That really is a remarkable story.
If the club was in the top four, they wouldn't be quite so angry.
No, but...
But they would still... No, there'd still be the rumble.
Yeah.
But no, there's a lot of discontent there, right?
Yeah.
At the moment. And obviously they changed managers and that. That took the heat off for a little bit. But
it is an interesting... you wonder about this. With that big TV money coming in, I mean, the team that finishes last in the Premiership, last but still survives, and the team that avoids relegation, the lowest-ranked team that avoids relegation, it's going to make £97 million.
Yeah, it's... But
in that TV contract.
No salary cap, right?
So no salary cap, but still.
It's not cheap to operate.
No.
And it's not definitely not cheap to win.
I know,
you know, God love Leicester, and this is a great story.
It's a tremendous story.
But that's going to happen, you know, once in a blue moon.
It's
Well, essentially, it's never happened before since they formed the Premiership, so enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it's probably safe to say this is a one-off. I think it's also safe to say that, but I would think if you're a fan of anybody other than Man City, you're probably cheering for Leicester as much as you are your own club right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd trade Manchester United going to the Champions League to see Leicester win this thing easily. John Paul Morosi is a national baseball writer for Fox Sports. He has his top 10 storylines going into spring training. And he's also got time for us. John Paul Morosi joins Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt when the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.